CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gordon Chang, Newsweek, Kate Stone, and most importantly, at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter, to comment on these last days since President Biden, in a television appearance, announced what looked to be news about Taiwan, the threats by the People's Republic of China, and the United States' intentions. Gordon, a very good evening to you. I did not watch the performance, but I've read enough versions of it now because I was puzzled whether we do have or don't have a policy towards Taiwan. I was taught many years ago to use the Kissinger construction, strategic ambiguity, about the U.S. and Taiwan. Has that changed after the president's remarks? Good evening to you, Gordon.
Good evening, John. We don't know what Biden Taiwan policy is. We know what the president said. He said it in August to ABC News, and he said it to CNN on Thursday, that we will defend Taiwan. But we have heard clarifications from the White House press secretary, the State Department spokesman, and from the defense secretary walking that back. So now I think you can say that there is utter confusion. We got to remember that constitutionally, it's the president who makes foreign policy. But right now it appears that foreign policy in this administration is being made by Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary.
We welcome Jonathan Ward, the author most recently of China's Vision of Victory. Jonathan, we draft you in this quandary. After listening to the president's remarks on Thursday and the White House's, the metaphor is walking backwards, meaning there was a revisionism. After the remarks by several players in the administration, can you now say whether or not there is clarity between Washington and Taipei in the event of a catastrophe?
Hello, John. It's good to be here. I think it would be hard to say what kind of clarity might exist between the two governments. But, you know, certainly President Biden was very, I think, direct and natural in saying simply yes to we would defend Taiwan if attacked by China. So I thought even though the White House and the State Department and others came out to say, look, nothing has changed on U.S. policy towards China, I think it was a sort of nice reading from perhaps where he himself sits on this issue, and the fact that it came so readily and has come multiple times, I think is more meaningful than many who are trying to parse the issue now.
Your presentation in China's Vision of Victory, does Beijing regard Taiwan, the conquest of Taiwan, as necessary, as critical, as something they will achieve momentarily?
Well, I mean, they are absolutely clear that they intend to take Taiwan, that the reunification, as they see it, of the mainland with Taiwan is essential to the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation. And very, very recently, Xi Jinping has said in a speech on the 110th anniversary of the Revolution of 1911, he says, you know, the hidden danger to national rejuvenation is the reunification of the motherland, and that the Taiwan issue is purely China's internal affair and no external interference is allowed. So he's also making very clear that, you know, they're setting the table for this, as they've done, you know, with similar words ahead of other limited conflicts that they had in the 20th century. So I think we have to take it very seriously.
Gordon, the provocations off of Taiwan, the Taiwan Strait, the South China Sea are years in the making. But most recently, we had a spectacular provocation of the Chinese announcing a hypersonic missile test, an orbital bomber, I'm told, is capable here, a glide weapon. There's a lot of technology talk here, but in any event, it's a creation that is not, at this moment, in the U.S. arsenal. Is this about Taiwan? Is this about Xi Jinping? Is this about his ambitions? How do you interpret that missile, Gordon?
Certainly, it's China's ambition to dominate the delivery of nuclear weapons. And by the way, John, the United States is not currently working on a similar hypersonic glide vehicle. We have been working on hypersonic battlefield vehicles, but nothing strategic like this. And essentially, you know, we have seen China in September and before then, make nuke threats against Japan, against Australia. There have been a series of threats against the United States to nuke the American homeland going back to the turn of this century. So, yes, I think China intends to use the hypersonic glide vehicle as well as its DF-41 missiles and silos to intimidate countries into submission.
You have a question for Jonathan, Gordon.
Jonathan, I think that you're right that President Biden has instincts on Taiwan. He's been consistent in his messaging. But it doesn't really matter because the question is, what does China think? And on Friday, a day after the CNN town hall, Chen Weihua, who is the European bureau chief for China Daily, actually tweeted out something which I think is pretty close to Beijing's view of the administration. He said, Biden's too old, he likes to bluff, and he doesn't know what he's talking about. How do you measure Beijing's reaction and assessment of the Biden administration on Taiwan?
Well, Gordon, I think it makes sense to step back and look at this in the bigger picture. For some years now, Beijing sees the U.S. in permanent decline and they see themselves in a permanent ascendancy. I mean, they believe that the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation is the ultimate destination, that nothing can stop that, that the U.S. can't stop that, that anything that really comes together against that is doomed to fail. So when you look at it in that context, I agree that the issue here is that deterrence is in the eye of the beholder. And you're talking about a very confident, very aggressive, very militaristic Communist Party of China that has also been in the process, in my opinion, of educating its population and preparing them for war. Having a militarist discourse that talks about the need to use force against other nations and increasingly, against the United States itself. So you and I have both watched that discourse build over the years. And I think that means that we're added up to, you add it up and we're in a situation in which they very well might decide that sooner or later the time comes for them to use this military that they have built and are very proud of. And if they miscalculate in terms of what that means for the region, because it's not just the U.S. I mean, Japan's threatened. I mean, pretty much everybody is threatened by this. They like to say that we're playing with fire, but I think they themselves are all too confident about what this really means.
Jonathan, the hypersonic missile, that looks like an arms race. That looks like a challenge by Beijing. Is it?
Well, I think, I wrote about the hypersonics a bit in China's vision of victory in the sort of military ambitions section. And I think what one has to appreciate here is that as far as Beijing is concerned, they look at their nuclear force as a defensive, force. And it's defensive to them in the context of what we would see as expansionist territorial ambitions. So you basically, you're building up a massive conventional force that's designed to take territory, whether in the East China Sea, the South China Sea, Himalayas, Taiwan Strait. And then it's backed by an increasingly potent and advanced nuclear capability. So that's sort of the ultimate aggressive posture. And what analysts have pointed out since the hypersonic was launched is that that's going to allow a kind of stalemate at the nuclear level. And that will allow them to become much more aggressive in the conventional domain. If they're able to, let's say, field advanced nuclear capabilities during a conventional war.
Gordon, the breakdown in China's miracle in these last days, we could go through the list. Does that in any way limit their ability to conduct an arms race, or can they find the money on credit?
I think, John, that it shortens their time frame, which means that they see a closing window of opportunity. We saw this, for instance, in propaganda beginning January of last year, where they actually talk about a limited time in which to accomplish their Chinese dream. So I think that it's the problems internal, which are becoming more and more evident, are actually really making China even more dangerous than it normally is.
You have a question for Jonathan.
Jonathan, you talk about the regime preparing the people for war. What's holding it back?
Well, I think at the end of the day, there's a big fundamental calculus there. I mean, on one hand, you have a nationalism that culminates in military aggression. That's the nature of the nationalism that I believe they've stoked, for some years now. But then you have the process of the rise of China depending on its integration with the world economy. So if they were, let's imagine that they believed they could actually carry out a successful, conflict and seizure of Taiwan. At that point, their relationship with the world's democracies, their relationship with much of the international community would be, would have gone past a point of no return. I mean, economic engagement with China would be unthinkable at that point. So when you have an economic strategy, and let's not forget, I mean, we're talking about the military side, but the economic strategy here is to, basically indigenize the key industries, become self-reliant, sort of an autarky strategy, but also to tie the world closer and closer to China. So that the world becomes more dependent, not less dependent on China as a supply base, as an industrial base, as part of the supply chain. They believe on some level that they can have their cake and eat it too, I think, that they can have a world economy that's dependent on China and that they can fulfill their military and sort of political territorial goals. That's what makes this so dangerous. And on the other side of that, what we're going to have to do to counter China, I mean, we really are going to have to start disengaging economically. And it makes no sense right now. I mean, you see this like hypersonics, you hear the rhetoric about Taiwan, you see the military that they're building, whether it's missile capability or you know, the world's largest navy now. And yet our business leaders, you know, whether it's Larry Fink or Jamie Dimon or you name it, are very, very, still very optimistic about doing business in China. So we have national security in a sort of massive state of crisis. And then we have business leaders that want to go and continue to build into the People's Republic of China. So that's what the United States needs to resolve. We have to start pulling back our business leaders so that they do not continue an economic rise. I mean, they can only do that with our help. All the problems that we've mentioned here can be essentially ameliorated by Western capital, Western technology, and Western engagement through trade. Jonathan, start to pull that back.
Jonathan Ward is the author of China's Vision of Victory. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patrick.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.